ಆಯ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಪ್ರಸ್ಥಾಯ ಭೂತಲೇ ಶ್ರೀಮತಿ ಭಕ್ತಿ ವೇದಾಂತ ಸ್ವಾಮಿನಿತಿ ನಾಮನೇ ನಮಸ್ತೆ ಸರಸ್ವತಿ ದೇವೇ ಗೌರವಾಣಿ ಪ್ರಚರಣೆ ನಿರ್ವಿಶೇಷ ಶೂನ್ಯವಾರಿ ಪಶ್ಚರ್ಚ ದೇಶ ತಾರಣೆ. ಸೊ ಟುಡೇ ಇಸ್ ವೆರಿ ಸ್ಪೆಷಲ್ ಡೇ. ಐ ಥಿಂಕ್ ಇಟ್ಸ್ ಡನ್ ಆಸ್ಟ್ರೊಲಾಜಿಕಲಿ ಬಿಕಾಸ್ ಐ ಥಿಂಕ್ ಆನ್ ದಿ ಒರಿಜಿನಲ್ ಡೇ ವಾಸ್ ಸಮ್ ಟೈಮ್ ಇನ್ ಜುಲೈ 11th ಆರ್ ಸಮಥಿಂಗ್. But because of the changing of the months and the... Today is the auspicious incorporation of ISKCON society. So many of you may have read Satsvarupa Maharaj biographies, Srila Prabhupada's early days, preparing to come to America, his early days in America. And it's just, it goes beyond words to see the condition he was living in, you know, up in the Upper West Side. Then things went bad there. He was all alone. Goes down to the Bowery. In America, in New York, there were a mixture of all kinds of people. From the 1800s, Irish immigrants came, and then a lot of German immigrants came, and there were Puerto Ricans, and the Negroes were there, and then Italians, and it was a big mixed match of cultures and society. And in the 60s in particular, when Prabhupada was sent by Krishna to plant the seed and spread this ISKCON society, there was a lot of confusion. There was that Vietnam War. All the youth were very much against the war, and they were all experimenting with LSD, mushrooms, peyote, you know, marijuana, everything. Just, they're trying to have a different experience something spiritual, reading so many books from so many philosophers, and there's a description there, we don't have time to read it, how when Hayagriva, at that time, wasn't Hayagriva, but He was in the Lower East Side, and he saw Srila Prabhupada. He just came back from India because he was searching for a guru. He was searching for spirituality. Also Keith Kirtananda, he was also in India, and he was preparing for a PhD on some sort of religious studies. But they were all living together in a small, dirty apartment, and as many, you heard the word hippies. A lot of people, they may have been educated, they may come from good families, but they were very much not happy with the way society was going, nor were they happy with the answers of their parents or teachers. So they were searching for something more meaningful, something spiritual. They were looking, they wanted, even Brahmananda, late Brahmananda, just passed away. Last year he also spoke on this day. We have a video we'll be showing. He also went to India. So we're all, everyone is searching for some happiness for Krishna, but they're going about it in the wrong ways. So today we're going to read something from Srila Satsvarupa's biography and Srila Prabhupada. I just picked the place. This is prior to the opening, but this is give you an idea. Sometimes young men would come with scholarly presentations to test the Swami's knowledge of Bhagavad Gita. You have read the Gita, Prabhupada would say. So what is your conclusion? See, just see Prabhupada, an elderly Swami in some very simple cotton, so fearless and so powerful, and he could always take command and control. So, you have read the Gita, what is your conclusion? If you claim to know the Gita, then you should know the conclusion that Krishna is presenting. But most people don't think that there was supposed to be a definite conclusion to the Gita. And even if there were such a conclusion, that didn't mean they were supposed to arrange their life around it. So although the Bhagavad Gita was available in the West, many people would read Bhagavad Gita, Thoreau, Emerson, Gandhi. People appreciated Bhagavad Gita. But as Prabhupada said, they did not arrange their life around it or take it seriously. The Gita was a spiritual book, and you didn't have to follow it. This is their idea. One young man approached the Swami asking, "What book will you lecture on next week? Will you be teaching the Tibetan book, of the Dead?" As if Prabhupada would teach spirituality like a college survey course in world religions. "Everything is there in Bhagavad Gita," Prabhupada replied. "We could study one verse for 3 months." And there were other questions. "What about Kampas? What is his philosophy?" Prabhupada would ask. He says, "Everything is absurd, and the only philosophical question is whether to commit suicide." Prabhupada, "That means everything is absurd for him. The material world is absurd, but there's a spiritual world beyond this one. That means he does not know the soul. The soul cannot be killed." Adherents of various thinkers approached him. "What about Nietzsche, Kafka, Timothy Leary, Bob Dylan?" Prabhupada would ask what their philosophy was. And the particular follower would have to explain and defend his favorite intellectual hero. So people didn't know who to follow. They followed a famous musician, Dylan, or some philosopher, Nietzsche, who didn't really speak about anything of God or the purpose and goal of life. "They're all mental speculators," Prabhupada would say. "Here in this material world, we are all conditioned souls. Your knowledge is imperfect. Your senses are blunt. What good is your opinion? We have to hear from the perfect authority, Krishna." "Do you mean to say that none of the great thinkers are God conscious?" a boy asked. Their sincerity is their God consciousness. "But if we want perfect knowledge of God, then we have to consult Shastra." Often there were challenges, but under the Swami's stare and hard logic, the challenger would usually trail off into thoughtful silence. Thoughtful silence. Because Prabhupada is very powerful, and he was very much enthusiastic about spreading Krishna consciousness. Is my reading okay? Can everyone understand it? No problem. Often there were challenges, but under the Swami's... Oh, yes. "Is the spiritual knowledge of China advanced?" Prabhupada would sometimes answer simply by making a sour face. "Well, I'm a follower of Vedanta myself, Prabhupada. Do you know what Vedanta means? What is the first aphorism of the Vedanta Sutra? Do you know?" "No, I... "Then how can you speak of Vedanta?" "Vedaischa savar aham eva veja." Krishna says that he is the goal of Vedanta. "So if you're a Vedantist, then you must become Krishna conscious." "What about Buddha? Do you follow him?" "No." "No, you just talk." Prabhupada is very funny. "No, you just talk, right? Why don't you follow? Follow Krishna, follow Christ, follow Buddha, but don't just talk." "This sounds the same as Christianity. How is it any different?" "It is the same, love of God. But who is a Christian? Who follows? The Bible teaches thou shalt not kill. But all over the world, Christians are expert in killing. Do you know that?" "I believe the Christians say that Jesus Christ died for our sins. So why are you all still sinning?" Although Prabhupada was a stranger to America, they were strangers to the absolute truth knowledge. Whenever anyone would come to see him, he wouldn't waste time. He talked philosophy, reason, and argument. He constantly argued against atheism and impersonalism. He spoke strongly to prove the existence of God and the universality of Krishna consciousness. He talked often and vigorously. You know what vigorously? Enthusiastically, with determination and power, strength. Day and night, meeting all kinds of questions and philosophers. He would listen also, and he heard a wide range of local testimonies. He heard the dissatisfaction of young Americans with the war and with the American society. One boy told him he didn't want to get married because he couldn't find a chaste girl. Another confided that his mother had planned to abort him, but at the last moment, his grandmother had convinced her not to. He heard from homosexuals. Someone told him that a set of New Yorkers consider it click to eat the flesh of aborted babies. Hard to believe that somebody could think that this is a very hip thing to do, eat aborted babies, like animals. And in every case, he told them the truth. He talked with Marxists and explained that although Marx says that everything is a property of the state, the fact is that everything is the property of God. Only spiritual communism, which puts God in the center, can actually be successful. He discounted LSD visions as hallucinations and explained how God can be seen factually and what God looks like. Although these one-time visitors came and went away, a few new friends began to stay on, watching the Swami deal with different guests. They began to appreciate the Swami's arguments, his concern for the people, and his devotion to Krishna. He seemed actually to know how to help people, and he invariably offered them Krishna consciousness. Much as they could take as a situation to their problems, a few began to take the Swami's message to heart. Prabhupada, we shall call our society ISKCON. Prabhupada had laughed playfully when he first coined the acronym. So Prabhupada, he made the acronym in ISKCON. He had initiated the legal work of incorporation that spring while still living on the Bowery. But even before its legal beginning, he had been talking about his International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And so it had appeared in letters to India and the Village Voice. A friend had suggested a title that would sound more familiar to Westerners, International Society for God Consciousness. But Prabhupada had insisted, Krishna consciousness. God was a vague term, whereas Krishna was exact and scientific. God consciousness was spiritually weaker, less personal. And if Westerners didn't know that Krishna was God, then the International Society for Krishna Consciousness would tell them by spreading his glories in every town and village. Krishna consciousness was Prabhupada's own rendering of a phrase from Srila Rupa Goswami's Padyavali, written in the 16th century, Krishna Bhakti Rasamrita Bhavita, to be absorbed in the mellow taste of executing devotional service to Krishna. But to register ISKCON legally as a non-profit, tax-exempt religion required money and a lawyer. Carl Jurgens had already gained some experience in forming religious, political, and social welfare groups. And when he had met Prabhupada on the Bowery, he had agreed to help. He had contacted his lawyer, Stephen Goldsmith. Stephen Goldsmith, a young Jewish lawyer with a wife and two children, an office on Park Avenue, was interested in spiritual movements. When Carl told him about Prabhupada's plans, he was immediately fascinated by the idea of setting up a religious corporation for an Indian Swami. He visited Prabhupada at 26 Second Avenue, and they discussed incorporation, tax exemption, Prabhupada's immigration status, and Krishna consciousness. Who's been to 26 Second Avenue? Anyone? So it still exists. Devotees are there, and kirtan is going on. Lectures are still going on. 26 Second. You can also go to the courtyard where Prabhupada would chant his japa. Prabhupada's apartment was in the back. At one point, we thought about purchasing that building, but they're leasing now. But and also Tompkins Square Park. Just seeing where the whole thing just unraveled and how Prabhupada just planted that seed and nurtured it very carefully. So Mr. Goldsmith visited Prabhupada several times. Once he brought his children, who liked the soup the Swami cooked. He began attending the evening lectures where he was often the only non-hippie member of the congregation. Earlier it was describing some of the funny looking people that were coming to the lecture. Prabhupada was lecturing on Gita, and most everyone was on LSD, drugged out of their mind, and when they started the kirtan, they thought, this is another experience, so I'm going to go for it, you know. So they were very much attracted by the Swami. Not only because of that, but Prabhupada had obviously magnetic attraction. So one evening, having completed all the legal groundwork and being ready to complete the procedures for incorporation, Mr. Goldsmith came to Prabhupada's lecture and kirtan to get signatures from the trustees of the new society. So July 11th, 1966. Prabhupada is lecturing. Mr. Goldsmith, wearing slacks and a shirt and tie, sits on the floor near the door, listening earnestly. You know, everyone knows what earnestly means? Earnest, like, you know, very attentively, very, very desirous to hear, very earnestly to the lecture, despite the distracting noises from the neighborhood. It's right on 2nd Avenue, and there's all these delivery trucks and cars and bicycles and children playing and screaming and talking and dogs barking. So Prabhupada had to tolerate all this noise and all this commotion and distractions. But still, Prabhupada has been explaining how scholars mislead innocent people with non-devotional interpretations of the Bhagavad Gita. And now, in recognition of the attorney's respectable presence, and as if to catch Mr. Goldsmith's attention better, he introduced him into the subject of the talk, Prabhupada. I will give you a practical example of how things are misinterpreted. Just like our president, Mr. Goldsmith, he knows that expert lawyers, by interpretation, can do so many things. When I was in Calcutta, there was a rent tax passed by the government, and some expert lawyer changed the whole thing by his interpretation. The government had to reenact the whole law because their purpose was foiled by the interpretation of this lawyer. So we are not out for foiling the purpose of Krishna, for which the Bhagavad Gita was spoken, but unauthorized persons are trying to foil, like spoil and ruin, the purpose of Krishna. Therefore, that is unauthorized. All right, Mr. Goldsmith, you can ask anything. Mr. Goldsmith stands, and to the surprise of the people gathered, he makes a short announcement, asking for signers on an incorporation document for the Swami's new religious movement. So these are many guests. Some are regulars who would come there to see Swamiji, Prabhupada, and hear the philosophy, but not very many serious people at that time. It was very early. So Prabhupada, they are present here. You can take the address now, Mr. Goldsmith. I can take them now. Yes? Yes, you can. Bill, you can give your address, and Raphael, you can give yours, and Don, Roy, Mr. Green. As the meeting breaks up, those called on to sign as trustees came forward. Standing around in a little storefront waiting to leave cursorily, you know, just like looking through the document, through the pages the lawyer has produced from his thin attaché, and to sign as he directs. Yet not a soul among them is committed to Krishna consciousness. Mr. Goldsmith met his quota of signers, a handful of sympathizers, with enough reverence toward the Swami to want to help him. The first trustees who would hold office for a year until the first annual meeting of the corporation are Michael Grant. Everyone knows Michael Grant? As Mukunda Goswami? Who puts down his name and address without even reading the documents. Mike's girlfriend named Jan and James Green. No one seriously intends to undertake any formal duties as trustee of the religious society, but they're happy to help the Swami by signing his fledgling society into legal existence. As Brahmananda often said, they had no idea that this experience would go beyond the Lower East Side, the Second Avenue. They had a little, it was like a little gift shop. It said matchless gifts. That was there prior to Prabhupada. It wasn't that Prabhupada didn't put matchless gifts. Matchless gifts was already painted there because they had some unique gifts prior to Prabhupada coming there. But how it was prophetic that Prabhupada was giving the matchless gift, Krishna consciousness. But most of the people who were signing had no idea where it was all going. According to law, a second group of trustees will assume office for the second year. They are Paul, Gardner, Roy, and Don. The trustees for the third year are Carl Jurgens, Bill Epstein, and Ralph. None of them know exactly what the half a dozen legal size type pages mean, except that Swamiji is forming a society. Why? They want to know, why is Swami forming a society? You know, what's the purpose of this? For tax exemption? In case someone gives a big donation? And for other benefits an official religious society might receive? But these purposes hardly seem urgent or even relevant to the present situation. Who's going to make donations? Like, they had no idea that anybody's going to give anything, except maybe for Mr. Goldsmith, who has any money. They were all bums on the street, practically speaking. But Prabhupada is planning for the future, and he's planning for much more than just tax exemptions. He's trying to serve his spiritual predecessors and fulfill the scriptural prediction of a spiritual movement that is to flourish for 10,000 years in the midst of the age of Kali. So Prabhupada had a different vision. Within the vast Kali Yuga, the present, which is to last 432,000 years, the 1960s are but an insignificant moment. The Vedas describe that the time of the universe revolves through a cycle of four seasons or yugas, and Kali Yuga is the worst of times, in which all spiritual qualities of men diminish until humanity is finally reduced to a bestial civilization devoid of human decency. However, the Vedic literature foretells a golden age of spiritual life, beginning after the advent of Lord Chaitanya and lasting for 10,000 years, an eddy that runs against the current of Kali Yuga. With a vision that soars off the end of the millennium and beyond, yet with his 2 feet solidly on the ground of Second Avenue, Prabhupada has begun an international society for Krishna consciousness. Jai, Srila Prabhupada ki. He has many practical responsibilities: paying the rent, incorporating his society, and paving the way for a thriving worldwide congregation of devotees. Yet he doesn't see his humble beginning as limited as limiting the greater scope of his divine mission. He knows that everything depends on Krishna, so whether he succeeds or fails is up to the Supreme. He has only to try. I'm going to read that again because that's actually been Srila Prabhupada's mood the whole journey on, you know, getting ready, getting on the Jaladuta and coming to America. He knows that everything depends on Krishna, so whether he succeeds or fails is up to the Supreme. He has only to try. And that's also our mood for Sankirtan. When we go out, we know we're not the doers. We depend on Krishna for his reciprocation. If Krishna gives and Krishna convinces the other people in the heart to, you know, be part of, help out this Krishna consciousness movement, then it happens. We're not the doers. Krishna is the supreme doer. The purposes stated within ISKCON's Articles of Incorporation reveal Prabhupada's thinking. They were 7 points, similar to those given in the prospectus for the League of Devotees he formed in Jhansi, India, 1953. That attempt had been unsuccessful, yet his purposes remained unchanged. Now this is important, everything's important, but these 7 purposes of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, they're always printed in Back to Godhead magazine in the very front, you'll see them. So this, the purpose of the society is A, to systematically propagate spiritual knowledge to society at large, and to educate all peoples in the techniques of spiritual life in order to check the imbalance of values in life and to achieve real unity and peace in the world. You see what how all this is Prabhupada's revealing his heart. Systematically propagate spiritual knowledge to society at large, Sankirtan movement, to educate all people in techniques of spiritual life, preaching, in order to check the imbalance of values in life and achieve real unity and peace in the world. Like we have the United Nations, that's also in New York. You see all these flags, and Prabhupada often criticizes all that United Nations does is increase more flags, more bodily designations, and the world is in a very difficult situation, so Prabhupada is trying to check the imbalance of values in life. B, to propagate a consciousness of Krishna as it is revealed in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. C, to bring the members of the society together with each other and nearer to Krishna, the prime entity, thus to develop the idea within the members and humanity at large that each soul is part and parcel of the quality of Godhead, Krishna. To teach, D, the next one, to teach and encourage the Sankirtan movement, congregational chanting of the holy name of God as revealed in the teachings of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. E, to erect for the members and for society at large a holy place of transcendental pastimes dedicated to the personality of Krishna. F, to bring the members closer together for the purpose of teaching a simpler and more natural way of life. G, with a view towards achieving the aforementioned purposes, to publish and distribute periodicals, magazines, books, and other writings. Regardless of what ISKCON's charter members thought of the society's purposes, Prabhupada saw them as imminent realities. As Mr. Rubin, the subway conductor who had met Prabhupada on a Manhattan Park bench in 1965 had noted, he seemed to know that he would have temples filled up with devotees. There are temples and books, he said. They're existing, they are there, but the time is separating us from them. So 1965, Prabhupada sitting in a Manhattan Park bench, and this subway conductor who met Prabhupada, he understood, and Prabhupada was revealing to him that there are temples, there are books, but the only thing that's missing is the separation of time between it all manifesting. The first purpose mentioned in the charter was propagation. Preaching was the word Prabhupada would most often use. For him, preaching had a much broader significance than mere sermonizing. Preaching meant glorious, selfless adventures on behalf of the Supreme Lord. That's a good description of Sankirtan. Glorious, selfless adventures on behalf of the Supreme Lord. You know, you can't go wrong being one of the preachers who are out there working on behalf of the Lord. Lord Chaitanya had preached by walking all over southern India and causing thousands of people to chant and dance with him in ecstasy. Lord Krishna had preached the Bhagavad Gita while standing with Arjuna in the chariot on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Lord Buddha had preached. Lord Jesus had preached. And all pure devotees preach. ISKCON's preaching would achieve what the League of Nations and the United Nations had failed to achieve: real unity and peace in the world. What did they fail to achieve? Real unity and peace in the world. ISKCON workers would bring peace to a world deeply afflicted by materialism and strife. They would systematically propagate spiritual knowledge of the non-sectarian science of God. It was not that a new religion was being born in July of 1966. Rather, the eternal preaching of Godhead, known as Sankirtan, was being transplanted from east to west. The society's members would join together, and by hearing the teachings of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, and by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, they would come to realize that each was a spirit soul eternally related to Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They would then preach this to humanity at large, especially through Sankirtan, the chanting of the holy name of God. ISKCON would also erect a holy place of transcendental pastimes dedicated to the personality of Krishna. Was this something beyond the storefront? Yes, certainly. He never thought small. He seemed to know that he would have temples filled up with devotees. He wanted ISKCON to demonstrate a simple, more natural way of life. Such a life, Prabhupada thought, of the villages of India, where people lived just as Krishna had lived, was most conducive to developing Krishna consciousness. And all six of these purposes would be achieved by the seventh. ISKCON would publish and distribute literature. This was the special instruction Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had given to Srila Prabhupada. He had specifically told him one day in 1932 at Radhakund in Vrindavan, if you ever get any money, publish books. Right? If you get money, publish books. Don't keep in the bank account. Certainly none of the singers saw any immediate shape to the Swami's dream, yet these seven purposes were not simply theistic rhetoric invented to convince a few New York state government officials. So it wasn't that Prabhupada was trying to make some document. You know, many people do, they create societies and corporations just to abide by the law, but they do whatever they want. They don't really follow any of their principles. But Prabhupada meant to enact every item in the charter. Of course, he was now working in extremely limited circumstances. The principal place of worship located 26 Second Avenue in the city, county, and state of New York was the sole headquarters for the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Yet Prabhupada insisted that he was not living at 26 Second Avenue, New York City. His vision was transcendental. His Guru Maharaj had gone out from the traditional holy places of spiritual meditation to preach in cities like Calcutta, Bombay, and Delhi. And yet, Prabhupada would say that his spiritual master had not really been living in any of those cities, but was always in Vaikuntha, the spiritual world, because of his absorption in devotional service. Similarly, the place of worship, 26 Second Avenue, was not a New York storefront, a formerly curiosity shop. The storefront and the apartment had been spiritualized and were now a transcendental haven. Society at large could come here. The whole world could take shelter here, regardless of race or religion. Plain, small, and impoverished as it was, Prabhupada regarded the storefront as a holy place of transcendental pastimes dedicated to the personality of Krishna. It was a world headquarters, a publishing house, a sacred place of pilgrimage, and a center for which an army of devotees could issue forth and chant the holy names of God in all the streets in the world. The entire universe could receive Krishna consciousness from the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, which was beginning here. There's so much before and after. There are a lot of, just give you an idea, a feeling of, the atmosphere, the culture, how the people were dissatisfied. In the Bowery were all the drunks and people, there was mugging. I don't know if you know what mugging, when you're on the street, somebody puts a knife to you and takes your money, grabs you. And, this is all kinds of criminal activities. I remember I was growing up in Buffalo, New York, which was more central. But New York City, we knew it. You go to New York City, be careful, because it's a dangerous place. So there's probably the first place he goes to New York City. In the lower, the most degraded place, what is it? Lord Chaitanya saved who? Jagai and Madhai? So they're full of Jagais and Madhais everywhere. It was just really super degraded place. I wanted to read something here about the preaching mission. Because Lord Chaitanya and Nityananda actually began the Sankirtan movement that Prabhupada was now carrying all over the world. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to preach the Sankirtan movement of love of Krishna throughout the entire world, and therefore during his presence he inspired the Sankirtan movement. Specifically, he sent Rupa Goswami to Vrindavan and Nityananda to Bengal and personally went to South India, and he sent Prabhupada to New York City. I made that. In this way, he kindly left the task of preaching his cult in the rest of the world to the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So we have a big responsibility. Who can follow in the footsteps of Rupa Goswami and Lord Nityananda and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? But Prabhupada created, he took all this potency together and created a society that we can all work together somehow to carry on this message. Vrindavan is Prabhupada's residence. Religious people in India, as well as religious scholars in the West, saw Prabhupada as a Vaishnava sadhu from Vrindavan. When he began his preaching in New York City, he would often introduce himself as coming from Vrindavan. Most people say, where are you, especially in India, where are you from? What's your country? Where are you from? So people say, where are you from? He said, I'm coming from Vrindavan. So he identified not just India, but I'm from Vrindavan. I'm sure no one really understood or heard, knew it, Vrindavan, but here I am now sitting in New York, he once said, the world's greatest city, but my heart is always hankering after that Vrindavan. I shall be very happy to return to my Vrindavan, that sacred place. The people of Vrindavan also thought of Prabhupada as their hometown success. Upon retiring from family life in 1954, Prabhupada had gone to live in Vrindavan, first at a temple near Keshi Ghat, and then at Radha Damodar Temple. After taking sannyas 1959, he had continued to reside in Vrindavan, and when not living there, to reserve his two rooms at Radha Damodar Vrindavan is the home of Krishna consciousness, the place of Krishna's childhood pastimes, the place where the six Goswamis sent by Lord Chaitanya had excavated holy places, written transcendental literature, and built temples. Any devotee could feel at home there, and thousands of Vrindavan's residents carried bead bags, chanted Hare Krishna, and wore the Vaishnava Tilakan dress. Vrindavan belonged to Radha and Krishna, and this was still acknowledged by the residents of the present day Vrindavan. Ultimately, Vrindavan is revealed only to the pure devotee. Vrindavan is the eternal residence of all spiritual souls in their eternal relationship with Krishna. The Vrindavan in India is a transcendental replica of Goloka Vrindavan, the eternal planet where Krishna resides in the spiritual world. The pure devotees aspire to attain to Goloka Vrindavan after finishing their life in this world. And Prabhupada, therefore, as a pure devotee of Krishna, naturally felt at home in Vrindavan. He sometimes said that if he were to become very ill, he would prefer not to go to a hospital, but to simply go to Vrindavan and there pass his last days to spread the glories of Vrindavan. Prabhupada had left Vrindavan, but like a traveler away from home, he always thought of returning. So we see that we actually have a duty to perform a job. Many people are coming to Vrindavan to spend their last days. I was getting shocked, a little worried in America when one after another started leaving us, you know, Aravind, Lochan, Kurma, Rupa, Brahmananda, Surabhi, and this, you know, so many, like within a very short period of time, I gave class in Alachua, and I said, there must be some sort of special portal, you know, some special opening that if you leave now, you're going to go back to the spiritual kingdom. So all these Vaishnavas who helped Prabhupada in the early Surabhi, you know, helped with Bombay, the Vrindavan temple. So he was very much involved working with a pure devotee to help spread Krishna consciousness from 26 Second Avenue to what we have now. In Delhi alone, 11 temples, 12? How many temples? So many temples. Big temples. But also the amount of books and how many languages throughout the world. And I heard one lecture, Prabhupada speaking in San Francisco, 1970. He said that, I am old. I'm going now to Japan to oversee the printing of my book. Then I'll go to India to maybe I can start a temple in India. He said, yeah, of course there are many temples in India, but I also want to have a temple. Just like many people, they have children, you want to have some of your own children. So Prabhupada sees ISKCON and his society as a family. You know, he's created a family. And this ISKCON society, and Prabhupada said that I may not come back, I'm old, but you carry on with the Sankirtan. So the devotees were, I'm sure, very full of love and affection for Prabhupada. And what was probably the fear of losing Prabhupada or not coming back was a little bit shocking. But somehow, with faith in Prabhupada's words and what Prabhupada had left up to that point, they felt confident they could carry on. And you see, Prabhupada came back to India and he came even more vibrant. Despite the health difficulties, the challenges, working in Kali Yuga, the atmosphere, the degraded society in which he was trying to give some cultural, spiritual teaching, was not possible. Even he tells a story of one of his godbrothers was approached by, I forgot the name of the person, he was some governor and he was British. And he said, can you make me a brahmana? He said, yes, why not? Just follow four principles, no intoxication, no gambling, no illicit sex, no meat eating, and you can become brahmin. He said, impossible. So a person who's educated in a respectable position, and most people would say, maybe he's wealthy, he's a government man, he's educated, he says it's impossible. So what to speak of all of us who are maybe not on that level? And how can we possibly give up all these activities which are basically the foundation of our material existence? That's why we're here. We want to enjoy LSD, you know, the sex, and the intoxication. Everything is there in a material world, but it all leads to misery and suffering. And Prabhupada came, created a family, and produced many children. And many children are coming. We're adopting many children. So ISKCON society, with all its faults, just like in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, Prabhupada admits there may be some faults in his presentation, you know, not his, due to his humility, not saying that, oh, everything I'm doing is perfect, because even Hayagriva, he offered to edit his manuscripts because he was an English professor. And Prabhupada said, yes. So he goes, well, if there's any typing, let me know. So Prabhupada said, yes, I will show you. And there was manuscripts of man. He goes, I got many lifetimes of typing for you. So Prabhupada, he took the help, just like what Ramchandra, he took the help of monkeys. You know? But they're not ordinary monkeys. They became great bhaktas, great servants, empowered by the potency of serving the Lord. So if we're monkeys and we're unable to, you know, come to the Vaishnava platform, let us continue hearing and chanting and serving, and Prabhupada will empower us so we can actually, in this lifetime, have an opportunity to see Krishna face to face, to stay in the holy Dham, Vrindavan, and leave this world as human life is meant for, to awaken our love for God, our Krishna consciousness. And this is the purpose of the incorporation of ISKCON. We heard just a little bit. Obviously, it's not just a story. This is a reality. And we hear of Krishna and the various demons and Kamsa, and how these demonic associates of Kamsa could turn into any form. They have this mystical power. Now, for most of us, we don't see that, and we think, well, these are fairy tales, these are just stories. Bhagavad Gita is just a fictitious allegory, you know, to help people present their own views in life, their own philosophies. But Prabhupada, a real personality, many devotees were with Prabhupada. I saw Prabhupada, and many of you have seen Prabhupada, and we're hearing Prabhupada's teachings, Prabhupada's words. And this story is completely factual. What Prabhupada, the austerities he performed, his love, his dedication, his determination to serve his Guru Maharaj, his faith that Krishna, it's up to you. If you want to make my words appropriate so people can understand, then you do that. I'm just your puppet. Make me dance. You make me dance as you like. So Prabhupada, in a humble mood, took that role that I'm an insignificant beggar. But he was begging for Krishna consciousness. So he is revealing that if one wants Krishna consciousness, they have to have utsaha, enthusiasm. And without enthusiasm, one cannot achieve anything in this world. If you want to be a big businessman or successful musician or artist or anything, you need enthusiasm, determination, and patience, and apply yourself. So we want to encourage the devotees to remember this day specifically, feel part of the family, contribute, do your part, because no one, like, you know, in a family, someone's got to be doing the dishes, someone's got to cook, someone's got to clean, someone's got to go out and work and make the money, and many things are necessary to keep a family together. So all of us, as we're working cooperatively together, if whether we're serving the deities directly or mopping the floor, or, you know, we're in a guest house, a welcome center, or sitting in the big president's office, whatever it might be, you know, we're all just servants trying to do something for Prabhupada's ISKCON society. So So today we read about that. Anyone have any questions, comments? Yes, Prabhu.
Prabhu, corporation is generally made for industrial purpose or for commercial purpose. How the idea of corporation for spiritual purpose is?
I'm not sure I caught the whole question. Did you catch the whole question?
Corporation.
The microphone there, one more time. Okay, I see. So generally a corporation is made for material. Yeah.
Then why the idea of creating a corporation came in the very past year?
Well, there are different kinds of corporations. There are corporations which are meant for organizing people and materials to make money. Then there are religious corporations as well, which are non-profit, religious, tax exempt. They're also incorporated too. So, although it's an incorporation, but it's a religious incorporation, spiritual incorporation, non-profit. Many churches are also incorporated that are preaching God consciousness. So Prabhupada, in the very beginning, he understood, because he had that, you know, the ability as a businessman also and a pure devotee, he understood that you need to create a society to keep everyone together, they can identify with purposes and with a mission behind it. So he had that missionary spirit, developed the ISKCON Corporation, non-profit, religious corporation. And a few members took to it, and as time went on, Prabhupada brought many, many more people to help, manifest his vision, the vision of Krishna and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, thank you very much. ISKCON Society, Srila Prabhupada ki. Yeah. Thank you.